Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to legendary humor writer and editor Tony Hendra, head potentate of the new New York Times parody website, thefinaledition.com. Stick around. I'm only starting to put pressure on the poor man to bring the funny. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 700 archived celebrity and pop culture interviews for your listening pleasure. The show is brought to you today by Audible. Audible is offering Mr. Media listeners a free audiobook download and a 14-day trial offer to give you a chance to check out their very cool service. I love listening to books on tape. If you've never tried it before, actors or sometimes the authors themselves read to you. It's great for the commute, the beach, or even unwinding before bed. You can choose a free audiobook from Audible's enormous library of titles, including the National Lampoon Radio Hour classics, or titles written by Tony Hendra, including Father Joe, The Man Who Saved My Soul, and The Messiah of Morris Avenue. You could also download The Profiler, written by famed criminal profiler Pat Brown and yours truly, which Pat will read to you personally. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience that includes alumni from the National Lampoon The Funny Years and Spy The Funny Years in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. I always knew of Tony Hendra's magazine work, being of the generation that were teens and then college students during the best years of both the National Lampoon and Spy. But I never really knew Hendra until I read Rick Meyerowitz's book, Drunk, Stone, Brilliant, Dead, The Writers and Artists Who Made the National Lampoon Insanely Great. Meyerowitz wrote that Hendra was one of the brilliant guys in the book's title. He was also very good at holding his alcohol, apparently. Often, reading the magazine, you can't tell who wrote what, but Tony's prose has a specific gravity. You can feel its weight on the page. His sentences, like shiny steel, fit together with a metallic sound, like the business parts of a Gatling gun locking in place. And his words ring like bullet casings hitting a steel deck after being fired. Okay, am I intimidated to talk to someone that clever? Well, of course. Why do you think I'm relying on Rick Meyerowitz's words instead of my own? Anyway, Tony Hendra is back in the spotlight with the launch of thefinaledition.com. It's a broad parody of the New York Times and media in general. Now, you might argue that on any given day, the New York Times itself is but a parody of the New York Times. But that won't deter the likes of Tony Hendra. He has the old gray lady in his sights, and his trigger finger is ready to squeeze. Tony Hendra, welcome to Mr. Media.
Nice to be here, Bob.
Pleasure is all mine. Appreciate your time. I got to ask you, you've kind of poked your wicked wit in a lot of directions over the decades, but why in 2011 the New York Times? Why not, you know, the Huffington Post, something like that?
Well, there's several answers to that, as always. When you get to my age, there's never just one simple answer. But the main one is because it's there. I mean, it's always worth parodying the New York Times. But the more sort of business-oriented explanation is that I'm actually in the process of launching a website called thefinaledition.com. And ultimately, the final edition will be its own website. It'll be the final edition. The idea of the final edition is that it's trying to bring to the internet the sort of humor that we had at the Lampoon, the sort of humor that we practiced at Spy, the kind of humor that we expressed when we did Spinal Tap. It's what you might call funny, smart, in the know kind of humor. And the idea here is that that on the internet, in general, there are some notable exceptions, but on the internet, humor tends to be dominated by the sort of frat boy through funny cat video spectrum. And this seemed to me to present an opportunity. So having picked the name The Final Edition, I cast about what would be the most fun way to launch The Final Edition, and I and some of my colleagues had a brainwave, which was, hey, why don't we do the final edition of the New York Times? It's going to die soon anyway, so that'll be really funny. And that's pretty much we came to the conclusion of doing the very final edition of the New York Times.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. And it's very sad that we're actually at that point. I mean, did you ever think 20 years ago you'd be talking about a day when you'd be parodying the final edition of the New York Times? Did that ever seem possible?
Well, oddly enough, about a little more than 30 years ago, I did do a parody of the New York Times with some Lampoon friends and a guy called George Plimpton, the wonderful humor.
I do remember that.
Yes, it was called Not the New York Times.
Right.
And that was in 1978, when the Times was absolutely at the acme of its power and influence and prestige. And it certainly, you know, the reason we did it then was because we basically loved the Times and respected it, and therefore it had to be torn down and trampled on, which is the basic premise of what I've always done. And the contrast between then, when we were doing a print parody of probably the most important newspaper in the world, and now, when we were doing, possibly for the first time, a major parody of an actual website of a newspaper, with the newspaper struggling with a moron as its publisher, and
don't hold back. Tell me what you really think.
No, I will. I want to be very carefully. And numerous scandals over the last 10 years, which it's had to endure, it's a very different target. But it remains the old gray lady, and the old gray lady is as constipated as ever, and has its wonderful quirks. So we've had great fun, parodying all those stylistic quirks, except they're now online, and there are many more personalities, so it's much more easier to do and target, and actually it was great fun. It was just as much fun as the first time around.
Now you throw up, you throw upon it, not throw up, but you throw upon it the new Fox Times,
right,
as the name, which I thought was hysterical because, of course, Rupert Murdoch bought the Wall Street Journal and has often been wondered if he was going to, go after the New York Times at some point.
Well,
that would be the death of the paper, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, what we've been doing, we actually launched this in the second week of May. And since then, we've been having great fun with the supposed corpse of the New York Times, which all kinds of people have been fighting over in our narrative, at least, including Bono, the Olsen twins, Gaddafi, the Saudi royal family, and numerous others, Lorne Michaels, Mike Tyson. Eventually, last week, or the beginning of last week, the Saudi royal family actually acquired the New York Times. And so for the last week before Murdoch came along, for the first time in its history, the New York Times had an Arabic headline, which was great fun just to see it sitting there. But the idea, this is the last bit of fun we're going to have with the New York Times, and it is that Murdoch finally rides to the rescue, as he puts it, and of course, completely destroys the newspaper. He appoints Sean Hannity as the editorial director.
Oh, my God. Well, I love the and then this will take you to my level of humor, which is the photo funnies level of humor. But I love the animated Sarah Palin.
Yes, the topless Sarah. She'll do anything for America.
She will. But the thing about that was I looked at that and I thought, okay, finally I can see something that people who support her see in her, because she looked pretty good topless.
She does. She looks pretty good. I didn't want to insult her.
No.
She's got quite a nice top, and I'm sure she does. But I have to add, just in case there are those people who might be offended by it, not Sarah Palinites. I mean other people who I think we know who we're talking about. I just want to say that it wasn't me that did this. It was Fox News. Okay,
right.
It's Fox News'
right.
idea.
Right. Of course. I apologize for being a little off there with my credit. I want to give credit where credit is due.
But Sarah dancing topless to Hail to the Chief is possibly one of the high and low points of my career.
Well, but now help me here. If this was Fox News that did it, how do we know it was Sarah Palin topless and not Tina Fey?
because this is a perfect caricature of Sarah Palin, which actually is done in the style of the Wall Street Journal. They do these line drawings, you know,
right,
these very,
right.
very famous sort of etchings. And believe it or not, I got the most famous artist who does those actual etchings for the Wall Street Journal to do this caricature.
Oh.
So it's definitely Sarah. It's definitely not Tina.
Who is the artist?
I don't know Tina that well, but I can assure you that is Sarah's top,
okay.
Not Tina.
All right. Who is the artist, by the way?
His name is Randy Glass, and he's a wonderful guy who works out of L.A. actually. And he's done great illustrations for me before. He actually did a topless Ann Coulter for me about 3 years ago, which went viral on HuffPost insanely. And I oddly enough, we didn't hear much from Ann after that. I think it sort of got to her. She was very low that year.
should probably write something in a book or title a book after you, something, some nice tribute.
Yes.
So,
it's amazing. It's amazing that velociraptors actually can write books.
Oh.
It really is.
So, I was going to ask you, and you kind of made reference to this right at the top. You've been critical of online humor. You know, some of the better-known sites are, I mean, Funny or Die, The Onion, Mental Floss, College Humor. Are any of those ones that you do not respect, or is it a lower level that you're pointing at and saying, that's just not funny?
Oh, I totally respect The Onion. I think The Onion's quite wonderful, and actually, I've been friends with them for a long time. And when I first hooked up with them in like 1999, which was right after they put out Our Dumb Century, which I thought was just one of the funniest things I'd ever read. Certainly, as I said to them, it's the funniest thing I've read since The National Lampoon. I mean, it actually made me laugh so much that I had to change my pants. But they said, and I certainly saw the connection, that they felt like they were the children of the National Lampoon, and I take that very seriously in a humorous way. But I do think it's true, and I think they're quite brilliant. I think they have a certain kind of sort of closed universe that they exist in, which is quite wonderful. And it's not really what I'm trying to do. So I don't think there's really, I mean, I think we're probably in competition for the same people, but I don't see myself as being in competition with them for sort of, you know, humor kudos. College humor, I'm referring to when I talk about frat boy humor, obviously, but they're successful and, you know, there are lessons to be learned from it. Funny or Die, I think, is still, I'm not sure what Funny or Die is. It seems to me to be a far more amorphous and possibly more promising website. And obviously, it too is very successful. But it's hard to tell when you have that many celebrities whether it's the celebrities or the humor that's getting your traffic. So I see a big opportunity here to do, you know, funny, smart, sort of not altogether political, but certainly political in the very broadest sense of that term. The kind of stuff I've always done, and frankly, is the only thing I know how to do.
Just out of curiosity, because I've had them on the show, have you seen what Cracked is doing these days?
Actually, Cracked is not to be underestimated. I think they're quite funny too. Again, you know, it tends to get formulaic with these sort of the 10 top things and the 5 worst things and the 18. More or less ridiculous things about, you know, all these, the kind of list humor I find kind of repetitious, but they've got some good people there. And well, what I was saying was that the list humor of Cracked I find rather repetitious. The 10 best things about your mother or something. They're nonetheless, there are obviously some good, funny writers there who occasionally have some sort of edgy ideas.
It's interesting because, you know, Crack came back from the dead. Mad has continued. It's not, they don't really have an online presence the way Cracked has kind of reframed themselves. And, yeah, some of the stuff that Cracked is doing is, is probably funnier than stuff that they did when they were in print, because they weren't very funny in print years ago. So I give them credit for coming back that way.
And actually, I saw the latest issue of Mad in my local supermarket the other day, and I was quite surprised to see that they were doing something about Facebook. So I mean, they're obviously keeping up with their grandchildren, you know.
Oh, very good, very good. Well, let me ask you one more thing before we take a break. You've got, speaking of talent, you've got an all-star cast on your masthead for the final edition, people who will be contributing. Now, tell me that these are people who will actually be contributing and not just people who've loaned you their name for publicity value.
No. I mean, I don't do that.
Okay.
It's anyone who's on the masthead there is or will be contributing. Terry Jones of Monty Python, for example, is already on. He's already doing a regular blog for us, which is called The View from Britain. And Mike Myers, who has not yet started his blog, will come on board when we actually go to the final edition, as its own self, rather than being a parody of something, because he's got a much more personal approach to what he wants to do, and it wouldn't have fit in the parody of the New York Times. So that's two examples of people who are definitely, you know, deeply involved in the whole process. Who else do you regard as a star?
You know what? I don't have the list in front of me.
Okay.
I do remember. I think Louis Grossberger was on the list.
Louis Grossberger, indeed. Louis is very, very important and a very, I think you could say, early adopter here. Indeed, the final edition of the New York Times was actually his idea, and we were going to do it in print, and then we decided it would be much better to do it online. But, yeah, he's terrifically funny and it's hugely prolific.
Very good.
And we even have the ex-head writer and now the executive producer of The Daily Show, a wonderful writer called Steve Waddow, who's just terrific.
Well, and I think you have Jeff Kreisler on the list. And
we do indeed.
Jeff's been on the show once or twice, and then I'm drawing a blank. There was one other fellow that's on your list who's been on the show with me as well.
Fugelsang?
No.
John Fugelsang?
No, I know who he is, but no, he hasn't been on with us. But it's quite an impressive list, absolutely.
Yes. So we have terrific people.
Well, let's take a quick break. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with former National Lampoon and Spy Magazine editor, and of course you know him from Spinal Tap, Tony Hendra, whose new website, thefinaledition.com, parodies the media, and at the moment, the New York Times. We'll be right back.
Mr. Clean gets rid of dirt and grime and grease in just a minute.
Mr. Clean will clean your whole house and everything that's in it.
Floors, doors, walls, halls, white sidewalls, tires, and old golf balls.
Sink, stoves, bathtubs, he'll do. He'll even help clean laundry, too.
Mr. Clean gets rid of dirt and grime and grease in just a minute.
Mr. Clean will clean your whole house and everything that's in it.
Can he clean a kitchen sink?
Quicker than a wink.
Can he clean a window sash?
Faster than a flash.
Can he clean a dirty mirror?
He'll make it bright and clearer.
Can he clean a diamond ring?
Mr. Clean cleans anything.
Mr. Clean gets rid of dirt and grime and grease in just a minute. Mr. Clean will clean your whole house and everything that's in it. Mr. Clean, Mr. Clean, Mr. Clean.
Hey, this is comedian Bill Engvall. I know what you're thinking. You cannot be a blue-collar comic because you were on the show with Mr. Media.
This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to and hopefully watching the Mr. Media interview with former National Lampoon and Spy Magazine editor Tony Hendra, whose new humor website is thefinaledition.com. You know, in the introduction, I read a little bit from Rick Meyerowitz's book, Drunk, Stoned, Brilliant, Dead, about the Lampoon days. I'm curious, and I know you mentioned that you were friends with Rick. What did you think of the book?
Well, I thought the book was absolutely magnificent. And I say that in the context of a number of previous Lampoon books, which I thought were anything but. I actually had the dubious distinction of writing the first account of the National Lampoon in a book I wrote called Going Too Far, which was a history of American satire from the mid-50s up into basically the demise of the Lampoon. But it wasn't a book. I mean, it was a fairly personal history of the Lampoon. But I found that the other books that came out about the Lampoon tended to stress to an unnatural degree the sort of fights and squabbles and egos and just the sort of negative part of the Lampoon in a way that seemed to me after a while to be not only tedious but depressing, because there were people who died at the Lampoon, obviously, who were central to its success in one way or another, like John Belushi and Doug, of course. But there were others too, and to stress all that stuff and the conflicts and so on seemed to me to give a very bad impression of just what enormous fun it was to go to work there every morning, and this book was in large part because it was done by an outsider who was also an insider, just was sort of, it expressed that spirit that we just. We had a wonderful time. I mean, obviously there were conflicts. It was a very successful magazine, and magazines' politics can always be deadly. But it was remarkable, really, just how much funny stuff we managed to produce. The other thing about the book that's really wonderful is that it concentrates on what was really the strongest and most unique part of the Lampoon, which was its artwork and graphics. The Lampoon was very funny and written by some very brilliant people, but its words were only part of the picture. The pictures were the other half, and this book celebrates those in a way that only an artist really could. So anyway, I think it was, as I say, I think it was a triumph and a great tribute to the Lampoon. Finally, the Lampoon finally got its due, and interestingly enough, the New York Times, who virtually never acknowledges the Lampoon, or had virtually never acknowledged the Lampoon up to that point, or I should say its importance in American humor from really the 70s on, considering how many people it influenced, finally did a review of the book, which is not only a glowing review, but said very clearly, without the National Lampoon, no Saturday Night Live, no Spy Magazine, no late night shows done by people of that generation, and so on and so forth. It was very gratifying to see that finally. The only sour note I thought was that I was described as legendary, which I normally interpret as meaning recently deceased.
Oh my!
But anyway, it's a fine book, and it's well worth the cover price.
Well, as you were talking about the book, I was thinking of some other folks from the Lampoon who've been on this show. Ratso has been on, and Drew Friedman's been on a couple times, and I'm probably missing a couple others. The thing that I really liked about Rick's book was probably exactly what you're talking about. As a guy who was in high school and then in college during that period of time, I always thought it had to be, as a kid, you think, oh, it must be a magical place to work. I submitted stuff to the Lampoon in those days. I have the rejection letters that were wonderful to get. I love that stuff. But it gave me a sense of place. I felt like a sense of place and a sense of time. And I didn't know if Rick had, just made it all too wonderful or captured it just right. I like to think he captured it just right because it appealed to me that way.
I think the best way, as somebody put it, the best way to put it actually is that what he managed to produce or edit was a 300-page issue of the National Lampoon, and that's really what was so great about it. I mean, it not only it wasn't just nostalgic either. I think a great deal of the material in there holds up very well. And I think one of the interesting things from my sort of personal point of view is that it was in a way because of that book that that I began to work on this site, because it brought when we were putting it together, and I wrote quite a few of the pieces in there too, as did others, but you know, there was a lot of that kind of writing to do. But it was just kind of wonderful to be looking at this stuff again and remembering just how frankly good and unique the humor was, and it very much was a reason for why I decided at my advanced age to actually take this step, because I sort of wanted to put that kind of humor back in the mix, and I think so far we're succeeding. Hmm.
Was there anything that he left out that you would have liked to seen in there? Any good stories or memories of your own that?
A lot more of my material.
There you go.
He left out far too much of my material. No, actually, I thought he did a wonderfully balanced job, and with the exception of his own stuff, of course, he got like 18 pages, but who could blame him? No. Who could blame him? I would have done the same thing.
I liked, I was delighted to see one of my favorites from when I was in high school was in there. It was Underwear for the Deaf.
Indeed.
So ludicrous, right. But, you know, I never forgot it all those years, and when I got the book and I was thumbing through it, I went, "Oh, it's here! Look, honey, you got to see this." And she's like, "You're an idiot. What do you know?" Anyway, now
that was one of the things about O'Donoghue. Actually, he had a wonderful way, and that certainly was one of them. Mm. The Vietnamese baby book was another. Mm-hmm. Just expressed in one phrase what was going on there. Brilliant.
Of course. Now I'm trying to remember. Was the wife tasting was yours, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
Yeah.
I'm proud to say.
And you know what?
They're fine, fruity Californian wine.
The sad thing is, I didn't get the joke until I was a grown man. I did not get the joke when I was in high school. It just didn't, you know. I'm afraid it went way over my head for many years. And then
there were many people who didn't get the joke at the time, but that was because they didn't drink wine.
Yeah.
They smoked coke instead. Yeah.
I can tell you, I was not drinking wine at that time. So that may have had something to do with it. Now, let's talk about the other book, Spy, The Funny Years, which in and of itself, it was a great title because it really pinpointed the difference between the beginning and the end. You succeeded founding editor Graydon Carter at Spy, and I'm thinking that had to be a tough act to follow, just in terms of expectation and staff. And what was that period like?
Well, actually, more accurately, I followed Kurt Anderson, who left quite soon after Graydon left. I had been a sort of eminence grise at Spy since it began, which was I wasn't used to being an eminence grise, and it was kind of interesting to be in that position. So I'd sort of been around since its foundation, but the two founding editors actually stayed with it for quite some time. And by the time that that Kurt was ready to move on, to it was probably not at its peak. He also didn't. And I say this about a very good and dear friend, but he failed to tell me when he designated me pretty much his successor that the magazine was $6 million in debt, which for a magazine that size at that time was a very large load, and that he'd also successfully driven away all fashion advertising by doing a really funny issue about the fashion world. So the sort of mainstay of Spy's advertising had disappeared. In addition, it was owned by this fat French playboy called Jean Pigozzi, mm-hmm. who really had only bought the magazine so that he could meet models and famous people.
Does that work? because I'd like to try that myself.
Apparently it does, if you've got $300 million, yes.
Man, it's always something. All right, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, but most of the money that was being lost by the magazine was his money, and he once told me that if I have all the money which I put into this stupid magazine, I could buy 2 pleasure boats. And I never did understand what a pleasure boat was, especially if you're fat and French. But anyway, he evidently had some image of ultimate pleasure other than owning a magazine that involved, you know, the ocean wave. But so it wasn't a happy tenure, although I did manage to do a parody of the New Yorker when Tina Brown was the editor, which I must say was great satisfaction.
Speaking, I was just thinking about this. One of the things that Spy was famous for over the years, and this is, of course, started before you took over as editor, was its swipes at Donald Trump. And here we are. He's still out there. I mean, didn't you think that Spy would have vanquished him or at least humbled him after all those years? He's worse than ever today.
Yes, it's a very poor tribute to the power of satire, I must say. The satirists move on, but the idiots remain. but I don't know if you noticed it, but actually in the first iteration, the final edition of the New York Times, which is no longer up, I sort of got my revenge on Trump by removing his hair. And it's a very simple idea, but it's amazing how stupid he looks like without his hair. As it said in the piece, his resemblance to a huge fleshy penis was unmistakable, and that caused him actually to withdraw from the presidency. Not his story.
So that's what it was.
Yeah. So finally, I've got rid of him.
Absolutely. And we all thank you very much. We appreciate you.
You're very welcome.
All right. Well, let's come full circle before we wrap up. You are going to be launching officially thefinaledition.com very soon. And I'm wondering, will this site kind of give us a sense of what the Lampoon or Spy might have been like had they had been launched in the digital age?
I think that's one way of putting it. I wouldn't want to give the impression that this humor is in any way nostalgic or backward-looking, though. And I have to say that most of the people who are writing for me are anywhere up to half my age, which I am delighted by. And, that said, I think bringing some edge and heft back to humor is something that we sorely need, especially with the kind of idiots and morons that there are running the place these days. They deserve more than funny cat videos. They really do.
Well, folks, listen, you can check out Tony Hendra's new media parody site, I think it's safe to say, The Final Edition. It's at or will be at thefinaledition.com. And, of course, he's the author of many books. He was former editor of National Lampoon, Spy. He was in Spinal Tap. And, Tony, have you...
I think it's probably true to say that the name Ian Faith, which was my character in Spinal Tap, is a better-known name than Tony Hendra.
Oh, I don't think so. No. Well, I guess it depends on what circles you're traveling in.
Yeah.
Tony Hendra means a lot more to me than Ian Faith. I will be honest with you. Maybe I'm in the minority there.
Thank you, Bob. I'll come on the show anytime you want.
That would be lovely. Have you? Obviously, we gave out the website for the Final Edition, but can people find you in social media places, Facebook, Twitter? Have you fallen
yes.
through all that?
Yes, indeed. We're on all those places. I think I can't remember the Twitter account. I think it's the Final Ed or the Fine Ed, something like that. And we're certainly on Facebook. Very lively, actually. We're having a wonderful time on Facebook and Tumblr and all the other places, yes.
Very good. Well, Tony Hendra, just a delight to meet you, and thank you so much for being on Mr. Media today, and good luck with the site.
Entirely a pleasure, Bob. Thank you.
Thank you. And folks, for more original interviews with America's or the world's favorite humorists, you can surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. And if you've enjoyed today's show, subscribe for free to Mr. Media via email, RSS, or iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many parts of Manhattan. Show your support of Mr. Media by supporting our sponsors, including Audible. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. We're also supported by thepartyauthority.us. Call DJ Ira for all your party entertainment needs nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-DJs or visit their website, thepartyauthority.us. If you've got an idea for a guest, a comment on today's show, or would like to advertise on Mr. Media, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com. You can also call our 24-hour listener line, 1-727-498-4711, and leave us your thoughts. Some messages may be used in an upcoming show, and toll charges may apply. You can also follow Mr. Media on Facebook, Twitter, or our new YouTube video channel. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate you giving up a piece of your day and spending it with Mr. Media. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Red Peters, and whenever I'm not snapping my pickle, I listen to Bob Antleman, Mr. Media.
Hey, did you know that you can listen to the latest Mr. Media on your phone with the Stitcher app? Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. Mr. Media is on demand and on the go with Stitcher. Download Stitcher for your phone today. Get the free download at Stitcher.com. That's S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.com.